Blog Talk Radio.
Free and strong and able to defend itself.
and the state of Israel is not alone. The United States and many other friends are deeply committed to Israel's security. Today, we can and must work together to ensure that threats of a new Holocaust never be fulfilled.
And the thing that...
But they haven't said a word about what's happened to Palestine. They're immediate neighbors.
And they're standing right in it, and they're committing genocide as we speak, as they're standing there, and there's no mention of Palestine or the illegal settlements and the genocide going on in Gaza. And it just, like, was unbelievable. You know, the hypocrisy was so thick in this thing. It says Shapiro,
so I don't even want to read the rest of it.
Well, Shapiro's comments were a mirror of those made by U.S. President Barack Obama on Friday, who said, together with the State of Israel and our friends around the world, we dedicate ourselves to giving meaning to those powerful words, never forget, never again.
Well, how about never recognize? It's right in your own backyard. So the article just goes on like I can't see the point in it, Leo.
Observers say both Shapiro and Obama were seeking to assure Israeli leaders of the good intentions of the United States amid tensions between Jerusalem and Washington over Iran's drive for nuclear weapons. Iran, which has called for the destruction of Israel and called for the Jewish state a one-bomb state, continued to thumb its nose at a raft of sanctions from Western nations and their Gulf Arab allies aimed at stopping Iran's nuclear ambitions in their tracks. And Iran says its nuclear program is peaceful, but the International Atomic Energy Agency, you know, which is, of course, in the pockets of the United States and Israel, says the Islamic Republic has sought and continues to seek nuclear technology that only has military applications. Washington has insisted sanctions will successfully deter Iran and are pressuring Israeli leaders to launch a military attack, strike out of fear that such a move would lead to war in the Persian Gulf and a spike in gas prices during an election year.
We already have a spike in gas.
We already did. Israeli leaders, however, remain unconvinced sanctions will prove effective and are said to be pressing for military strike on Iran's nuclear program. Defense Minister Ehud Barak on Friday warned foreign leaders in Davos, Switzerland, that waiting too long to take decisive action on Iran would be a grave error. And the situation is urgent because the Iranians deliberately drifting to what we call a resistance zone in which nothing will not block them, Barak said. So, I mean, the hypocrisy here is so thick, you know, that the word hypocrisy doesn't apply to sociopaths. I mean, they do not believe in it, you know. They're sitting on this thing, and they just unbelievable.
How about this? So, FDA approves computer chip for humans.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. That was an unbelievable deal, too. Check this one out, folks.
It's a little scary.
Yeah.
No, this is from where? What paper? Healthcare on MSNBC.com.
Yeah.
Medical milestone or privacy invasion. A tidy computer chip approved Wednesday for implantation in a patient's arm can speed vital information about a patient's medical history to doctors and hospitals. But critics warn that it could open new ways to imperil the confidentiality of medical records. The Food and Drug Administration said Wednesday that Applied Digital Solutions of Delray Beach, Florida, could market the VeriChip, an implantable computer chip about the size of a grain of rice for medical purposes. With the pinch of a syringe, the microchip is inserted under the skin in a procedure that takes less than 20 minutes and leaves no stitches. Silently and invisibly, the dormant chip stores a code that releases patient-specific information when a scanner passes over it. The UPC code, the identifier emblazoned on a food item, brings up its name and price on the cashier's screen. The very chip itself contains no medical records, just codes that can be scanned and revealed in a doctor's office or hospital. With that code, the health providers can unlock the portion of a secure database that holds the person's medical information, including allergies and prior treatment. The electronic database, not the chip, would be updated with each medical visit. The microchips have already been implanted in 1 million pets, but the chip's possible dual use for tracking people's movements, as well as speeding delivery of their medical information to an emergency room has raised alarm. If privacy protections aren't built in at the onset, this could be a harmful consequence for patients, said Emily Stewart, a policy analyst at the Health Privacy Project. To protect patient privacy, the devices should reveal only vital medical information like blood type and allergic reactions needed for healthcare caseworkers to do their jobs, Stewart said. An information technology guru at Detroit Medical Center, however, sees the benefits of the devices and will lobby for his center's inclusion in the VeriChip pilot program. One of the big problems in healthcare has been the medical record situation, so much of it is still on paper. As medically mobile patients visit specialists for care, their records fragment on computer screens that don't talk to each other. It's part of the future of medicine to have these kinds of technologies that make life simpler for patients. Pushing for the strongest encryption algorithms to ensure hackers can't nab medical information as information transfers from chip to reader to secure a base will help address privacy concerns. The U.S. Department of Health and Services on Wednesday announced $139 million in grants to help make sure President Bush's push for electronic health records for most Americans within a decade. William A. Pierce, an HHS spokesman, could not say whether VeriChip and its accompanying secure databases of medical records fits within that initiative. I guess I'm sure Obama has signed on to that,
Probably, too.
It doesn't really say.
Exactly what those technologies are is still to be sorted out. Pierce said it's all to respect and comport with privacy rules. An Applied Digital giveaway scanners to a few hundred animal shelters and veterinary clinics when it first entered the market, the pet market, 15 years ago. Now 50,000 such scanners have been sold. To kickstart the chip's use among humans, Applied Digital will provide $650 scanners for free at 200 of the nation's trauma centers.
Mm.
I don't agree with this shit at all. Implants cost $150 to $200. In pets, installing a chip runs about $50. For humans, the chip's implantation would be $150 to $200. Fultra could not say whether the cost of its total data discharge, storage, and encryption transmission of medical information would be passed to providers.
Hmm.
Want to read the rest of that, or do you want to skip it?
Because the VeriChip, I think it's probably enough. It goes on and on.
Yeah.
It's really saying that, you know.
Yeah, it's
probably in the future. I'm not sure I'm too wild about it, though.
I don't want it, and you know, we're talking about, I mean, and who do you trust with this stuff?
Mm.
You know, I mean, I don't trust anybody putting something in me like that.
Then they say, if it doesn't work or your information is stolen, whoops,
yeah,
and it's your problem.
Sorry, you know, so, you know, there. 7 biggest food label lies. I thought that was kind of an interesting article, too.
This is from Men's Health.
Let's see.
Why don't you make it a little bigger so we can read it?
Yeah, this is election year.
Hmm. That means that if you hate being lied to, the next 11 months are not going to be pleasant.
Yeah.
Your instinct might be to turn off the TV, cancel the paper, and unplug the internet until November passes. And that will work to a certain extent. But if you really want to avoid being lied to, I suggest you take an even more radical step. Stop going to the supermarket. And yes, you're as easily misled as Newt Gingrich's ex-wives. You're already clued into the idea that most political campaigns are nothing but a pile of bologna sandwiched between two slices of toasted mendacity. But unless you have a PhD in nutrition, you might not realize that the supermarket shelves are full of shysterism as the campaign trail. Every time you walk into the grocery store or restaurant, food marketers are trying to feed you a line of bull. That's why we launched the Eat This, Not That book series 4 years ago by playing David to Big Food Goliath. We keep the food industry honest. More than 6 million books later, the mindset of hungry Americans is clearly changing. Recent polls show that 96% of us would like genetically modified foods to be clearly labeled, and 70% of U.S. diners want more transparency about the sourcing and nutritional value of their menu items.
But until those improvements come to pass, you'll have to take your nutritional fate into your own hands, and the shelves of your local supermarkets and pages of your favorite chain menus are rife with health food imposters, and it's up to you and me to call them out. Some of these shady products are so egregious, in fact, that I believe that they deserve a swift smack in the heavy hand of the law. Below, I throw a book of seven foods that aren't what they seem.
Hmm.
And more than instant secrets that will keep you healthy and fit as your long follow, we be right here on Twitter, blah, blah, blah. But anyway.
Here is the lie. Food label lie seven, Sunny D, the crime.
Everybody's seen this product. Sunny D is an orange drink, like an orange juice.
Today Glow liquid presents itself as delicious, nutritious alternative to orange juice, but in truth, it's little more than sweetened water. Look at the label. The vast majority of this bottle consists of water and corn syrup, with less than 2% coming from concentrated juice, swirled with artificial colors, sweeteners, canola oil, and sodium hexametaphosphate. I don't even know what that is. The beverage company bases its vague nutrition claim, sunshine in a bottle, on the fact that Sunny D contains 100% of your vitamin C. But you know what else has 100% of your day's vitamin C? A scoop of broccoli, a few thick slices of red bell pepper, a medium orange. Also condemnable is Sunny D's current marketing campaign, which encourages children to collect Sunny D labels in exchange for school books. Care for some diabetes with that diploma?
The takeaway, fruit flavored is no substitution for real fruit. If you want the full nutritional package, buy fresh, unadulterated produce, or at the very least, 100% juice. Sunny D isn't the only beverage that will crown your healthy diet. Take a look at the 20 worst drinks in America to learn which will do the most damage to your waistline. We can look at that if you want. 20 worst drinks.
Let's look at that.
I'm curious today. The worst drinks in America. What are they?
What does it say?
We're back looking at advice and bashing. Apology, blah, blah, blah. Eat this, not that. Beverages. Eat this, not that.
Hmm.
Well, why don't they, the worst drinks in America, don't tell you what the worst drinks are? This article.
Doesn't look
so. Identified bloating, most bloating beverages in gas stations, bars, smoothie counters, and coffee shops across America. There's a sensible, satisfying stand-ins for Fractico. Now, there's a slideshow here.
Oh.
I don't know where that is.
I don't know where that is either. I think you have to keep going from article to article. But anyway.
Oh, wait. Maybe this is it.
Oh, right there. Next.
Sorry, folks. It was one of those trick things that they do on these websites.
Anyway, food libel line number six, natural Cheetos, crime. Abuse of the term natural. Last check, Cheetos don't grow in the wild. The evidence. When was the last time you saw a farrowing field of disodium phosphate or how a fresh crop of maltodextrin? Don't think so. These cheese puffs contain largely of corn, but they've been processed to the point that no 20th century farmer would ever recognize them as food. What's more, compared to regular Cheetos, they only have about 10 fewer calories per serving. Oh, and see those natural flavors on the ingredient statement? By FDA standards, those don't even have to relate to the food in question. To all we know, those are tinctures made from bovine bone marrow. Ooh.
Except in an instance of some meat products, the FDA doesn't regulate use of word natural, leaving the food industry free to define it on its own terms. In 2008, natural products reached $22 billion in sales, four times that of organic products. And defend yourself by reading the ingredients. If you can't pronounce it, it probably ain't natural.
Food label lie 6, Mott's Medley's fruit and vegetable juice, the crime. Although wholesome by juice standards, this one is promoted to parents as a substitution for real fruits and vegetables. But fruits and vegetables have fiber. Mott's has none. The evidence. The Mott's label says that each bottle contains 2 servings of fruits and vegetables. Sadly, the USDA agrees. The government's MyPlate considers juice to be a suitable substitution for produce. But here's why it's not. One of the biggest health boons of fruits and vegetables is the fiber, which fills the stomach, slowly digests, and fights disease. According to a recent study from Archives of International Medicine, people who consume the most fiber have 22% lower chances of a premature death from any cause. Yet the current rate of consumption, Americans are getting only about half the fiber they need. A single apple has more than 4 grams of fiber. That's 4 grams more than a bottle of Mott's Apple Medley.
And then,
the takeaway.
Modest amounts of juice can fit into, but no substitution for whole produce.
Food label life 4, Mission Garden spinach wraps.
We're running short on time here. I want to get one more, but why don't we just say, Mission Garden spinach wraps are guilty of identity theft, as there's no spinach to be found in these tortillas.
Food label lie 3, Doritos.
It's
the crime.
Green color is what they have.
The crime on Doritos. On the front of the bag, Frito-Lay reassures us that Doritos contain zero trans fat. Problem is, it's a blatant lie.
They have plenty of trans fat in them.
Food label lie 2, Chili Gutless Grill Classic Sirloin. The crime, the gutless entree, is well guilty of containing a shameful amount of salt. And food label lie number 1, Wendy's natural cut fries. The crime, Wendy's promotes these spuds as a healthy alternative to typical fries. The chain's website boasts that they're naturally cut from whole russet potatoes and seasoned with a sprinkle of sea salt. But there's more to it than that.
Quick skim through Wendy's ingredient statement is that it takes to expose these fraudulent spuds. They contain preservatives, added sugars, and hydrogenated oil. Okay, and last I checked, there was nothing remotely natural about infusing vegetable oil with hydrogen. Technically, Wendy's isn't lying that these fries are a natural cut, but it makes one wonder what would be the unnatural way to cut a potato. It's true.
Unbelievable.
What does that mean? You know, so it says restaurants toss out buzzwords like natural and fresh and wholesome as a clever way to make not-so-nutritious items seem closer to what you make at home. Truth is, food manufacturers haven't found a way to align your health with their profits, and until they do, the onus of healthy eating is on you and you alone. There are more than 45,000 options in average supermarkets. Some will wreck your waistline, some will shrink it. The easiest way to choose
Go ahead and put anything from our newly updated list of the 125 best supermarket foods in your shopping cart.
And you can check this out. This is, what the hell is this bag?
Men's Health.
Yeah, Men's Health, I guess, is where they posted it. So,
it's a Yahoo.
Yahoo News thing, but anyway. Yeah, whatever. But anyway, I wanted to hit on a couple more things before we...
we have about 5 minutes.
Yeah. Where is this here? This we're going to do another food thing, but I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the one I wanted to do on chemtrails? It was very important. I posted an article on chemtrails. Oh, by the way, I wanted to mention the U.S. falls to 47th in the press freedom rankings after Occupy crackdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the rankings due to numerous arrests of journalists who cover Occupy protests. And number 47th in the world.
That's pretty sad.
Yeah, it was pretty damn bad. Where is that one? I could have sworn I posted it. Good.
No, I asked you to post it on Chemtrails.
I thought I did, damn it.
It would have been done a long time because you got it. It would be far down.
No, it would have been in the last couple of days. Oh, jeez. Okay, well, we got about 5 minutes. Let's go to this one here, this Monsanto one.
In the meantime, we'll look.
Here's
if we can find the other.
Yeah. Damn it. This one here is on why is Monsanto lobbyist serving as FDA's food safety czar?
Huh.
You want to read that?
Talk about a conflict of interest.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is sick.
Why is a former Monsanto lobbyist currently serving as the FDA's food safety czar, waging war on small dairy farms that produce fresh milk? While factory farms operators are getting away with serious food safety violations, raw milk dairy farmers and distributors across the country have been subjected to armed raids and hauled away in handcuffs. The Food and Drug Administration is running sting operations followed by gun-drawn raids, usually reserved for terrorists and drug lords, as part of a crackdown on unpasteurized milk. Meanwhile, the FDA is letting the highly consolidated industrial meat and factory farm industry off the hook, despite growing problems. Not surprisingly, the person responsible for prioritizing armed raids on small dairies over holding agribusiness accountable is former Monsanto attorney and chief super lobbyist Monsanto's Michael Taylor, is the second highest ranking official at the FDA and as food safety czar is responsible for implementing the day-to-day policies that govern food safety laws for the U.S.
There's one more that I wanted to read regarding this that I posted today. And, Insect McBurgers and Bug McNuggets. That's another thing. Here they are. It's up here. These are the ones that I wanted to... Damn it.
Well, you only have a few minutes, so...
Yeah, no, I know. It's aggravating. No, that's not the one I wanted. Okay, I've got so many things. We'll probably have some time later to talk. Oh, here. Okay, carcinogenic dioxins are set free. This is a thing. EPA kneels to Monsanto.
Mm.
All right, this is sick. Because what's happened is that, you know, they're allowing the EPA, not the EPA, FDA.
The Environmental Protection Agency.
Okay. Dioxin is the most, but the FDA, okay, is still involved too. Dioxin is the most toxic man-made chemical known regarding damage to health and the environment. The EPA has withheld a study about dioxin for decades in order to protect large industries and produce dioxin while manufacturing herbicides, pesticides, plastics, and so on, bleach, and other chemicals. In addition, industrialized agriculture has pressured the EPA to withhold the report because dioxins become concentrated in animal products like meat, eggs, and dairy.
Mm.
The non-cancer portion of the EPA report is due out in the end of...
January 2012.
With cancer portion to follow at some unspecified date. Dioxin is an umbrella term for a class of super toxic chemicals that cause cancer, birth defects, liver disease, immune system damage, and many other health problems. There is no safe threshold dose as our bodies have zero defense against dioxin, according to health consultant Jonathan Campbell.
Half-life of over 100 years in the environment?
Yeah, dioxin has a half-life of over 100 years in the environment when it is below the surface or dumped in waterways.
Monsanto and Dow Chemical were the largest producers of that herbicide that created dioxin as a byproduct and was used as an agricultural herbicide before the 1950s. Monsanto, Dow Chemical, and other makers of dioxin-contaminated herbicides produce 50 million pounds of these chemicals per year for agricultural uses in the U.S. Since 1947, more than 3 million pounds of dioxin-laden 2,4-5-T was sprayed on more than 4 million acres of U.S. land, mostly farms and agricultural property. The 2,4-5-T dioxin-containing herbicide was later combined with 2,4-D to create Agent Orange for chemical warfare against
Imagine
the Vietnamese.
That.
Oh, my God.
The current sources of dioxin, all right, are plastics made from polyvinyl chloride. This includes products ranging from shampoo bottles to wallpaper to plumbing pipes. Incinerating trash, municipal city burning, individual household backyard burning.
Herbicides, weed killers, and pesticides that contain chlorine, paper bleaching, medical waste mass burn incinerators.
Medical waste mass burn incinerators, right? After reading this, it becomes apparent that many industries, especially chlorine manufacturers, herbicide makers, plastic producers, paper mills, severely affected if dioxin was properly regulated or eliminated. Industrialized farm, Big Ag, also has a big stake in EPA's upcoming report because the largest source of human absorption of dioxin is through consuming animal products like meat, dairy, and eggs.
So, how to avoid dioxin?
Use oxygen bleach products.
Use unbleached paper products. Yeah, avoid herbicide, weed killers, and pesticides.
And
a vegan diet.
Health consultants, yeah. I'm going to ask you to go. It says he also has a big plug for hemp. Can replace many plastics. It is natural, biodegradable. Uses little water and no herbicides or pesticides are necessary. And he plugs Ron Paul as an outspoken critic of failed wars on drugs that prevents the use of industrial hemp. Industrial hemp should not be classified as a drug. So I'm going to ask you to go to this website, which is a great website. It's called Natural Society. All right? Check that out.
Okay.
And and now we're going to go back, we're going to call our guest. Hopefully she is with us tonight. And let's see. Let's see if she's there. Who's our special guest tonight? And
hello.
Hello, Gail. It's Lila. How are you this evening?
Hi, Lila. Good. How are you?
Hi, Gail.
And Leo's right here, too. We're fine. We're calling you tonight so you can update us on what's happening with the Palestinian issue. And we understand there are also some boycotts that may be happening or are happening.
Yeah. It's pretty exciting, actually. And I think that's really what we should talk about tonight is this boycott, BDS movement, it's called. Boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And,
so boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And who's involved in that?
Okay. Well, this campaign started, I think it started before 2004, but in 2000, mm-hmm. in 2004, a group of Palestinian academics and intellectuals launched this Palestinian campaign for the academic and cultural boycott of Israel. It's called PACB,
mm-hmm.
and that's their website, PACB.org, PACBI.org. And
okay.
What they did was They asked, academics and internationals all over to join this movement. What happened was in July 2004, the International Criminal Court in The Hague, I'm not sure if it was the Criminal Court, it was the International Court of Justice in The Hague, announced or ruled that the wall, the Israeli wall of separation was illegal. and also
okay, that's
the
wall that separates Israel and Palestine.
Well, not exactly. It actually,
no?
It's not on the 1967, what they call the Green Line of the West Bank. It actually cuts into Palestinian land, and it's basically
okay.
just another, it's another land grab, actually.
You know, I misunderstood that. Okay.
Yeah, it would be one thing if it was on the Israeli side of the 1967 Green Line, but it's not. It goes into the West Bank.
It invades into Palestinian territory.
Yeah, it cuts villages in half. It cuts farmers off away from their land.
Arbitrarily just put this wall up into Palestinian territory?
No.
Yeah, through villages and through all kinds of things.
No, not arbitrary at all. What it does is it includes on the Israeli side of the wall very important resources like aquifers, water resources, and
mm-hmm.
And good land, good agricultural land, and also.
So it was a strategic building of this wall, as far as Israel was concerned. Was good strategy on their part to gain as much as they could, right?
Yeah, and the ostensible reason was to stop terrorists. And I say terrorists in quotation marks because
we read an article to open the show with, and it was on the U.S. ambassador, talking to Netanyahu and saying that
there should be no more Holocaust.
And the UN saying that there should be no more Holocaust. But throughout his talk, he didn't once mention Palestine, or the genocide, because he talks about genocide and so on and so forth, and he talks about Darfur and Rwanda and all these others, but right there where he was, they were conducting genocide of the Palestinians, and yet not one mention of that of his mentioned. It just reeks of hypocrisy, and yet, you know.
And that's why you have to do something like boycott and divest.
We have to do something, Gil. Something to make.
So this boycotting idea started in 2004.
Well, it started in 2004 in Palestine, and then a group of academics, picked up the call, I'm not exactly sure when, a couple of years ago, and launched the U.S. campaign for the academic and cultural boycott of Israel. And
Gil, I have to ask you a question. Are you on a speakerphone?
No.
Oh, you're not?
The phone is...
That's all right.
I need to speak directly into the...
Yeah, because it's cutting out a bit, and your voice is quite weak, but I can't magnify the sound anymore, so it's like just
talk directly into your phone.
Oh. Yeah.
Hey, so. I just turned up the volume. How's that?
That's better too.
That's a good thing.
yes. So anyway, this American group of academics also formed this U.S. campaign, and they're closely connected with the Palestinian group. And basically, using the tactics and strategy of the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa in the 1980s,
mm-hmm.
is modeled on that. And so, it was the International Court of Justice in The Hague in 2004. So a lot of groups in Palestine started this campaign, and they were non-profit or non-governmental organizations, and labor unions, and student groups, and cultural and social organizations, and so the same is happening here in America. So now there's two things that are intertwining. A group of scholars from America, including you know one of them, Keilani Kaanui, who's a professor at Wesleyan University, just recently came back from a week-long visit to the West Bank, And they've issued a statement. There were five scholars, and they've issued a statement calling for, you know, people to join the campaign. They went to...
I'm sorry, Gail, we're losing your voice completely.
How's that?
A little better. Is there... Yeah,
so Kalani issued a statement, then you kind of, we couldn't hear you.
No, this group of five faculty members from different U.S. universities went to Occupy Palestine, and they also later went to a conference in Lebanon. But they're calling on their academic colleagues everywhere to support the campaign for the academic and cultural boycott of Israel. And they went when they went to Palestine. They issued a statement. They say they witnessed numerous violations of Palestinian legal and civil rights, daily rituals of subordination, humiliation, and suspicion at the hands of the Israeli security state, continued expansion of settlements into Palestinian territories in violation of the so-called peace process, and repeated violations of Palestinian human rights by Israeli universities. And they, you know, they talked to Palestinian people whose houses had been demolished, to refugees from 1948, to families who were evicted from their homes in the middle of the night, and you know, their homes were taken over by illegal Jewish settlers, and so this was a great you know, eye opener, I know, for Kehilani and the other scholars. It was her first visit there. And in their statement, they say, "We believe that the perpetuation of the international travesty of colonial occupation in a post-colonial world must be brought to an end, for ultimately it threatens the rights, dignity, and security of everyone who believes in self-determination, equal justice, and human rights." So the interesting thing, too, is that this is sort of intersecting with a big controversy over a national BDS conference that's being held this coming weekend at the University of Pennsylvania. And there were two op-eds published recently that have generated a lot of interest, published in the in a local Philadelphia newspaper and website. And one was by Ali Abu Nama, who is a Palestinian American and the co-founder of the Electronic Intifada. The other article was written by James Wolseley. Remember James Wolseley?
Right. Yep.
Hawk director, former director of the CIA, and
he's
now the chairman of something called the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, which sounds like a warlike organization to me.
Yes.
This other guy, Jonathan Schanzer, and it was really interesting because Ali, I don't know if you read the Electronic Intifada, but he's a terrific writer and activist.
Gail, we're losing you again. You're breaking up a bit.
Okay, how's that? Can you hear me?
Stop whispering.
I'm not whispering.
One of the things that I think our listeners would be interested in is this boycott. Is there a website where they can go to and find out how they can join the boycott?
Yes, they should.
They would know what they could boycott.
Yes, absolutely. And there are lists and lists, and you would be surprised of all the things that you can boycott. The first, the U.S. Campaign website is usacbi.org. So it's
okay, would you repeat that again?
Yeah, usacbi.org.
Okay, and that lists the things that people could boycott if they want to join this?
Yeah, go onto the website. Explore it. Explore their mission statement. If you feel so compelled, endorse the call for boycott. Then there's a list of facts, and there's guidelines for applying the international cultural boycott. And to be clear, it's not a boycott of individuals. It's a boycott of institutions, Israeli institutions. That
okay.
What is that website? One more time.
It's USACBI.TI.
BI.
B as in boycott.
Okay.
.org.
It stands for U.S. Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. Also,
okay.
If you
USACBI.org.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Yes.
Leo's going right to that website.
I was just going to do it to see if.
Okay. And the other website, the Palestinian original boycott campaign, is PACBI.org.
Well, the USACBI is not listed on this one. Oh, boy.
Anyway, there's all kinds of products you would
USACBI, here we go. U.S. Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see what...
Are there actual products that people could boycott?
Yeah.
Tons of products, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also just go on Google and search for BDS, you know, Israeli BDS campaign, and you'll come up with a bunch of different websites.
Okay.
But one of the reasons why
it doesn't really have any products or anything on this. It's an academic boycott, so it's like it's not really a.
So when you talk about an academic boycott, what is it exactly you mean? What does that mean?
Oh, hang on a second. Here's one. Here's the site that will tell you exactly, give you a list of things.
Yeah, because I'm on the site, and U.S. statement, U.S. scholars, delegation call for academic and cultural boycott, distinguished scholars, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't say what you can boycott.
Okay.
Palestinian Civil Society condemns Arab participation, take action.
So does that mean that actually people who are scholars want more of a chance to speak out? That would be more like taking action, like what Kehlani and her group is trying to do.
It's not just academic boycott. It's academic and cultural boycott. So if you go into the Palestinian, PACB website, they have helped to prevent tons of singers and entertainers and actors and people
going
to Israel to perform in Israel.
It says refrain from participation in any form of academic cultural cooperation
or joint projects with Israeli institutions.
It says, advocate a comprehensive boycott of Israeli institutions at the national and international levels, including suspension of all forms of funding and subsidies to these institutions. Promote disinvestment for Israel by international academic institutions. Work toward the condemnation of Israel. Policies by pressing for resolutions to be adopted by academic, professional, and cultural associations, and support Palestinian academic and cultural institutions directly without requiring them to partner with Israeli counterparts and as an explicit or implicit condition for the support. So, and that's what they say. Those are the five things that they're recommending.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, go to UCACBI.
USACBI.
Yeah, U.S. Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. Okay. Get that.
That's quite a good site, Gail.
What?
That's quite a good site. It explains everything pretty carefully so that you can understand just exactly what that campaign is.
Right, but there are other sites that will give you lists of products that
you can
buy. Yep. One of them is www.bigcampaign.org.
What is it?
Bigcampaign.org.
Bigcampaign.org.
Okay.
www.bigcampaign.org. Bigcampaign.org. Okay. You spell that. Campaign.org.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, folks, give us a minute.
I'm trying to find this one site that has a huge long list of everything that is sold here. I often find things in all of our stores, even the Ocean Job Lot kind of places that have Israeli goods.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some of the hummus that's in the supermarkets are
Israeli
related.
Oh. Because we bought it, but I didn't know it was Israeli related. It says don't buy into Israeli occupation, but they still don't give you any products.
Yeah, it does. It talks about produce. It talks about Ahava products.
Maybe not on this site. Okay, let me. That's the site that says the big campaign.
Whoa.
What's that?
I hate it when my computer starts making music or talking.
It's talking back to you. That's okay.
Okay, boycott Israeli goods. Maybe this one will. Big campaign, boycott Israeli goods.
So maybe that'll give more of a.
Yeah,
you have to explore
it. Yeah, maybe get a list of what some of those
Israeli.
Yeah, I'm
looking for it. I should have been prepared. There is a place up that has all of these products. And you would be surprised. They may not be Israeli owners, but they're companies that do business in Israel. And here's a poster of them: L'Oreal, Lancome, Nokia, Marks and Spencer's, McDonald's, Maggie, the chicken cubes.
Ralph
Lauren, Revlon, Redken,
Perrier.
Really? Yes, Vichy Laboratories, Wonder Bra, Time Magazine, Sara Lee.
Okay.
Kit Kat.
What site are you on?
This is an image that it's like a poster of the boycott. Some of the boycott companies.
Oh, did you say where? Could you tell me where it was? I'm looking, and I haven't found anything like that yet.
It's underneath images for boycott Israeli goods. Let me see if I can.
Oh, is that in Google?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, no. Okay. Yeah.
It's like a big poster.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I see. All right. If anybody goes to that, go to thebigcampaign.org, okay, and then check out the images, and you'll see all these things. It's great, I guess. I'm trying to see which ones they are.
There's a lot.
Something about they don't really have them.
That's weird.
Maybe it's on Google or something, but it's not here. Well,
what's this? Probably
my
this,
butt.
But it might list a whole.
I don't know, my butt is big campaign. My butt in this big campaign.
Oh.
Nike? I don't know. That's one of the images. I don't know what that is. I'm looking at the images here, and I can't see that they don't have the
list that you were talking about.
Yeah. All right. Where did you go on that? Did you go on Google or did you go on?
I Googled boycott Israeli goods.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's on the Google images. Okay.
That's okay.
Boycott Israel.
Boycott Israeli goods.
Oh, okay. Boycott Israeli goods. Okay. Okay. And then let's go to images.
I think
okay.
We can find it. Oh, yeah. This is very different.
Yeah, very different. We were under Yahoo there. Whoops. Okay. Not really, though.
It had a big list. You just, right here, Leo.
Oh. I like that. Oh, okay.
Nokia, McDonald's.
Nestle's. Wow. Intel.
L'Oreal.
CNN.
CNN.
Yeah.
Wow. You wonder how they're all connected.
Coca-Cola.
No, yeah, that's not a surprise.
Boss.
Giorgio Armani.
Calvin Klein. Tommy Hilfiger. Johnson & Johnson. These are all Israeli products?
Well,
companies?
Companies that do business there. Here's another site.
Okay.
www.inminds, I-N-M-I-N-D-S. com.
www what?
In Minds. I N as in Norman, M as in mother, I N as in Norman, D S.
What was it again?
In Minds.
In Minds.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, DS, okay, .uk?
No, inminds.com/boycott-Israel.
I got it right there. No, it's right here. It's right here.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Let's see what that is. Oh, okay.
That has plenty of images.
Sara Lee. Boycott Sara Lee for supporting apartheid.
Those are some of the sites and those are some of the products. And,
okay.
Kimberly Clark.
There's
professional. Wow.
Now, was this boycott movement started by students?
No, it was started by intellectuals and academics, NGOs, of cultural groups in Palestine.
Wow.
If you go to the Palestinian boycott site, PACI,
mm-hmm.
you can find its history.
So how is McDonald's messed up in this thing?
Because they do business there.
They probably have McDonald's there.
Oh, yeah. Time Magazine.
Perrier Water. And how about the Starbucks coffins?
What?
Instead of Starbucks.
Starbucks, yeah. Star sucks coffins. I don't know if that's okay.
That's a play on that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's nonviolent resistance
mm-hmm.
to Israel's illegal occupation and illegal treatment of the Palestinians. And
it was very successful in creating change in South Africa.
Sure was.
Yes, it was the thing that actually brought down the apartheid regime.
And when universities and colleges withdrew their money from that country, that began the beginning of the end for apartheid.
The Middle East Crisis Committee is doing a campaign here in Connecticut to divest union funds and pension funds from Israel. State of Connecticut.
Well, I know there was a movement in the UK and Canada for that.
I haven't heard much about it here, but the UK has had a major unions divesting
themselves from all investments in Israel, and that was a few years back, and we didn't hear much more about that.
Right.
Well, I think it's more taking off now in the United States, and they're more
interested
this year. And the thing about this big national BDS conference at University of Pennsylvania that I started to tell you about,
yeah.
What happened was there was a growing student movement against any kind of Palestinian activities in the universities again, as there was a few years ago. And so these anti-Palestinian groups made such a fuss about this conference that several of the professors and scholars who were going to be on panels have backed off. so what has happened is it's generated a whole bunch of publicity, which always actually turns out to be good for the Palestinian cause, because the arguments that were made, particularly in this op-ed piece by Wolseley, were so ridiculous that it becomes so blatantly obvious that the pro-Israeli supporters, their arguments are unsustainable, and just their tactics are just so blatantly clear. Wolseley could not make any argument in this op-ed that he wrote, could not make any argument against the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign. So what he did instead was he brought up like superfluous things like, Iran's nuclear weapon, Iran's imaginary nuclear weapons, or he talks about the Syrian situation, or criticizes BDS for failing to address the Iran situation.
Right.
So in other words, they couldn't oppose BDS because they think it's wrong, but they're saying, oh, well, why aren't you opposing, you know, Assad and opposing Iran?
Mm-hmm.
So BDS should go further. It should oppose Iran as in Syria as well as Israel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just these worthless arguments, ridiculous arguments.
That's very typical of their arguments. They never really address the issue. They go to a side issue that is tangential, but not the issue.
But before we leave tonight, Gil, I'm going to tell people to go to this site again. InMinds. What is it?
.com.
Where is it?
InMinds.com
/ boycott -Israel,
they can learn a little more about it.
I mean Estee Lauder, Nestle, Sara Lee, L'Oreal, Johnson & Johnson, Disney, Revlon, Libby's food, JCPenney, Calvin Klein.
So people can learn a little more about what they can do.
These are all supporting companies, right?
And they can boycott some of these
companies, or
write letters to the companies saying why they're not going to buy their product.
Right.
And I think
that can be very meaningful and can put a lot of pressure on companies. It was very successful in bringing down the government of South Africa. You hit a company in their pocketbook, they think twice about making an investment.
And I'd like to say, if I may, that this campaign and for the Palestinian struggle is totally based on human rights. It's totally based on human rights, and that there will not be any peace until everybody's human rights are respected. And the call is to end the occupation of all Palestinian lands that were seized by Israel in 1967, to create full equality for Palestinian citizens of Israel and full respect for the rights of Palestinian refugees. And the thing is that it doesn't go into a specific political solution like of the one state or two states or three states or no states. It's just based on full human rights. And human rights are at the core of any resolution. And when people don't have full human rights, that's when you have a state of war.
You're absolutely right.
We want to thank you, Gil.
That's what brings peace. That's what brings peace, when everyone has their human rights. And you can't.
Right.
We agree with you 100%, and we hope that this movement will help that happen.
And we want to advise everybody also to check out thecornerreport.com and look for Gail Corey Townsend's articles in Indian Country Today magazine as well. And we thank you so much for being on, Gail.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
We look forward to having you on again real soon.
Okay, right? Have a good night. Okay, bye.
Okay, good night.
And we have music for In the Ring with Woody. Let's put that on. Yeah. Ring with Woody.
Thank you, Lila. Was it me, or was your last guest call not really all that clear?
I think she had a lot of trouble with her phone. I'm not quite sure what was going on there.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that's what it was. I thought that's what it was. All right, well, fantastic. Good evening, sports fan.
Actually, yours is cracking up just a little bit, so if you can speak closer to the mic as well, if you don't mind. Speak closer to the phone.
Okay, thank you. Good evening, sports fans. Watch your heads on the ropes as you step into the ring with Woody. Tonight's topics are a little bit of basketball, my Stone Cold Rock, and, of course, plenty of Super Bowl talk, and maybe I'll throw in a little bit of baseball at the end. But let's get down to it. As I've been talking about all season long, and the season I'm talking about is the NBA, Dwight Howard's been trying to get out of the Magic Kingdom. So say this much for Stubble, Van Gundy, his coach, at least is smart enough to keep a sharp object away from his throat. This just in, Orlando's idolization of optimism went on winter break. Going into last night's fling in Philadelphia, the Magic were in the midst of a seven-day stench. The team itself had humiliated itself three games in a row and four out of five. Recognizing a plump target when he sees one, Mitt Romney took an attack out against it. Let us play and recap. Last Monday, the Magic recorded a franchise frigid 56 points in Boston. Tagging glory with glory, the Magic shook off its fanatic behavior and deleted the primetime Pacers the very next night in Indiana. All seemed right in Disney World when the Celtics visited Thursday for the long-anticipated rematch, for those of us with short-term memory loss, of course. They promptly plummeted 27 points and trailed by 21 at intermission. After the coffee break, as if by magic, the home team disappeared. Boston scored 54 points and won by 8, the same number notched by Orlando in the final 12 minutes. Absolutely horrendous. Not once in the second half did Coach Van Gundy come close to figuring out a way to twist the tourniquet. How much pressing the oppressors? And decelerate the hemorrhaging. No matter what orders he may have given to the team's peripheral players, they never ceased fire from Frontierland or played catch with Dwight Howard. Why do something when you can just stand there with your arms clasped behind your head, kind of looking like Elmer Fudd? What did I do? What's up, Doc? Not to worry. Up next was Vacation to Lords, where Dave Stern's pride and joyless Hornets had lost 15 of 16. Eric Gordon was getting busy, fit for restricted free agency. Chris Cannon was deactivated, awaiting a change of address orders. Final score, Hornets 93, Magic 39, excluding Howard's input. You do the math. Nobody else tracked double figures. I guess Coach Van Gundy finally got the message across. The peripheral players gave Dwight full custody of the offense. At that point, the Magic had manufactured six straight quarters without attaining 20 in any of them, which is absolutely garbage. It was time for Howard to provide some always-appreciated comic relief before Sunday's replay against the pumped-up Pacers, who snuffed the Magic at home, no less, outscoring them by 24 in the final 24. I look at the guys, and they don't look like they want to play, he said afterward. I told them at halftime, if you don't want to play because you're too tired, just stay in the locker room, because it don't make sense for the team we should beat it just to demolish us. It hurts to get out there, and you play your hardest, and you expect everybody to play the same way. Howard didn't name names, of course. He handed down a blanket indictment. Of course, he really should be looking to himself. We all have to get better, but if you don't want to be out there, don't dress up. If you don't want to play, stay home. People work too hard. I want to win a championship. Yeah, but not in Orlando. We'll have to take Howard's word on that, but not as a member of his fraternity. On some abstract basis, I find it particularly peculiar someone who forcibly committed to fleeing the Magic Kingdom is upset when others aren't giving their undivided devotion. Say, you know, say what I want about LeBron James, how he mishandled it, you know, his exit from Cleveland, but at least James and Toronto's Chris Bosh, you know, they put out their contracts and prepared to forfeit a season's pay with large, you know, larger annual bumps by signing with Miami. Conversely, Carmelo Anthony and Chris Paul and now Howard polluted their team's environments before, you know, commencing exercises to get the hell out of town. You know, the self-absorbed strategy demand the trade, select the preferred destination, or 3 or 4, and extend for the Larry Bird rights maximum. I find it amusing that Anthony, Paul, and Howard, you know, profess endless love for the fans and the cities they abandoned. Meanwhile, not once have any of them confessed to suffering so much as a pang of concern for the team instability they created, unresponsiveness by teammates, a magic affliction Howard hasn't quite grasped, and a disarray left behind, you know, so far. The Magic have a chance to strike it rich, depending on, well, what team, the Lakers, the Nets, the Mavericks, and the Bulls, Howard tagged them as, you know, list on his privileged list, are willing to exchange for babysitting for the next 5 seasons. Now, Chicago, which is my team, cannot contemplate surrendering Joaquin Noah or Lou Dang. It says here, subtracting them from their untainted is a recipe for, you know, ruination. Notice, you don't see my boy Derrick Rose, last year's MVP, petitioning for a superstar sidekick. He would never degenerate his flawlessly compatible teammates like that. What's more, he recognized they've got a first-class thing going on. Yeah, that's just what the Bulls need, a free-throw shooting liability who can't be throwing the ball in the final 5 minutes of games up for grabs. The guy who led the Magic to the first-round playoff outage last season against the Hawks. The mope who publicly whines about his teammates, Van Gundy and general manager Otis Smith. On second thought, Howard does have a fairly strong case in all regards. Of course he should. Should managing partner Jerry Reinsdorf acquire Howard, we'll all know his next move is planned. Bring back Phil Jackson. This is more just selfish behavior. You know, it's very typical of the NBA. There's far more bad guys in the NBA than there are good guys. Now, speaking of good guys, we'll move on to the NFL here. Peyton Manning remains such a topic of conversation, you would almost think he was playing in the Super Bowl. The fate of the Colts' legendary quarterback. Yes? Hello?
Yeah, we're right here.
Oh, great. Okay. He's on so many lifts, he's threatening to overshadow his little brother Eli Manning's showdown with the Pats Sunday at Luke DeToil Stadium. Yesterday offered yet another whirlwind of discussion. Rumors, speculation about the next step for the four-time NFL MVP passer. Reaching such a crescendo that Colts owner Jim Irsay vowed to stop talking about Manning this week. We want to focus to be on Super Bowl, said Irsay. We engaged in a war of words with Manning through local newspapers last week over the Colts' likely decision to release the quarterback before the $28 million bonus comes due in early March. Now, to me, that was a strategic argument. What Irsay is trying to do is he's trying to put a little distance between himself and Manning so he's not looking like such the bad guy when he's, you know, when he says Manning, you know, they're going to cut him and they're not going to give him, he's not going to get that $28 million bonus and, you know, but blows it a break and he's doing it for his health. He's not going to look like a bad guy. Frankly, if I was the owner of the Colts, I'd be doing the exact same thing. Manning is certainly old now and his neck is a concern and you have the ability to draft probably the best quarterback that's been available in the draft, Andrew Luck, probably in the last 10 years. You know, they're comparing this guy to like Marino and all kinds of great, other great quarterbacks. And if you got the chance to go from one great quarterback, Peyton Manning, to another future great quarterback and make a changeover almost seamless from a business standpoint, you got to do it. Anyway, Manning's older brother, Cooper, had gotten the topic going again yesterday morning by telling the NFL Network Peyton is determined to play again at age 36, despite missing all of this season after undergoing 3 neck surgeries over the past 2 years. What I do know is Peyton is going to do every single thing human being can possibly do to get ready to play again, Cooper told the network. Where, when, and how he'll play, that's all up in the air. But as far as his body goes, Peyton's smart. He'll know what to do. Anyone predicting what will happen now is just going forward just wasting their breath. Manning's dubious health, many in the league are convinced the neck condition will force him to retire. Didn't stop media outlets around the country from speculating about his next destination. The Washington Post joined that crowd yesterday, reporting the Redskins sources say they would be interested in pursuing Manning if doctors eventually clear him to play. That's definitely the case. Washington has a ton of money, and they're always willing to throw it down for aging, and, you know, superstars, or, you know, the guys that are past their age. Washington has kind of become the East Coast version of the Oakland Raiders. You know, always looking to sign a big name. And the owner of the Washington Redskins is always, you know, always like selling some big Hollywood guy like 1% of the team. So it brings more media to the team, and he can hobnob with, you know, celebrities and the like, and that's something that he enjoys doing. Also, fans of the Titans got into the act yesterday with a pair of Tennesseans starting a website in hopes of raising money for an ad campaign in Indianapolis to convince Manning to return to the state where he started in college. The site comehomepeyton.com had already garnered $700 in donations just hours after going live, according to its creators. So, you know, Peyton Manning is definitely a big topic in Indianapolis, even though the Colts aren't even in the Super Bowl. You know, it's definitely very interesting. Frankly, there's two teams, in my opinion, that are perfect fits for Peyton Manning. One, and I think, you know, the top team would be the Miami Dolphins. The weather is great. He's got a couple of great receivers, and he's got Reggie Bush, who's an excellent running back and a catch-and-run guy as well, too. So, you know, and the weather's perfect, which Manning would like, you know. You got to remember, Peyton has played in the dome for a long time. So that's at least half a season of playing in good weather. So yeah, I don't think he's going to want to go, frankly, to a team like the Washington Redskins or a team like the Tennessee Titans or a team like the Kansas City Chiefs where the weather is, you know, it's cold. And the only warm games you might catch will be in the beginning of the season or when you travel to it, to a warm weather franchise's place. So I think the Miami Dolphins are definitely like his number one team that he would probably go to. Also, I think the number two team would be the San Francisco 49ers. As everyone knows, the Niners are very close this year going into the Super Bowl. And the difference is, in my personal opinion, you know, the Niners need a better quarterback. Brandon got a couple of games here. But, you put a guy like Manning in there, and it's definitely on. And I can guarantee they'll be in the Super Bowl. That's a fact, especially that running game and everything else. So, you know, that's very interesting. You know, and Peyton Manning will go down as an NFL immortal. So, you know, this is definitely an interesting topic, and that's why a lot of people are talking about it. Let's shift here to my stone cold lock for this week's Super Bowl. The spread. The New England Patriots are favored by 3. I thought it would go down to 2.5. It hasn't gone down to 2.5 yet. I would definitely take the Giants with the 3 points. Now, what scares me a little bit is that everyone and their brother believes that the New York Giants are going to win this and can't believe that the Giants aren't favored. Now, it makes me nervous when everybody, you know, is really thinking the Giants are going to win this. Because usually when everybody thinks one team is going to win, guess what happens? They lose. I don't know whether it's a jinx, whatever the case may be, but a lot of times this is what happens. But I don't think this is going to be one of those times. I'm definitely going to take the Giants, and I'm going to tell you why. For one, the Giants can rush 4 guys. They only need to rush their 4 down linemen, and they have some very good ones. Also, they've had 2 weeks off. They're even more healthy than they were 2 weeks ago. And they've been kicking ass and taking names for weeks. So you got to like that. I mean, you know, and any team, like I said, any team that can get away with just rushing 4 guys, you're steps ahead of the game. It makes your secondary better. And, you know, the guy that you're throwing past is Tom Brady. You know, when he gets a little bit of happy feet, when he gets gun-shy, takes him right out of his game. You know, that's the way you take, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, are fantastic quarterbacks. But the best way to take them out of their game, put them on the back, make them rush. Great players, when they perform in a great fashion, are able to slow the game down. Well, anytime you speed the game up, you make mistakes. And when you're worried about guys rushing you, guys hitting you, and the like, the game speeds up and you're not the great player that you were. You're a lesser player, and that plays into the hands of the Giants. I think they're going to speed the game up for Tom Brady, and it's going to make his life miserable. Two, the New England Patriots defense is absolute garbage. Granted, they looked good last week, but you know, 2 weeks ago. But the offense they played was not a very good offense. Now, the Giants' offense, on the other hand, is stupendous. You've got fantastic wideouts, and you've got, you know, some running backs that are going to go all out for you. And frankly, you know, the Patriots' secondary is just absolute garbage. The Giants have so much speed in the wide receiver category. They're going to be, you know, making a lot of deep catches. And we're talking 30-plus yarders. And a lot of times these guys turn 30-yarders into touchdowns. You know, they run it for another 30 on top of that right into the end zone. Or even some of these 20-yard pass plays. Once these guys get some separation, boom, they're gone. These guys are so freaking fast. It takes one mistake by these secondary guys. The guy slips and falls. Anything along those lines, and these Giant receivers are so fast, next thing you know, they're doing a touchdown dance in the end zone. So, you know, that's another thing. So we're talking about the Giants' defense is fantastic. Four-down linemen can rush. And the Patriots' defense is horrendous. So you got to really go with the Giants on this one. You know, as much as, you know, the theory of, you know, when everyone takes, you know, one team, you really want to go the other way. I just don't think this is one of those times. You know, I think the scale has tipped far into the Giants' favor. And I can assure you the Giants are hungry. Now, there hasn't been much billboard material. However, Tom Brady, yes, the golden boy, as they call him, did slip up. He planned a victory party celebration for the Patriots fans. The Giants got wind of it. So they feel disrespected, which is fantastic. That's kind of what you want. You want them to feel disrespected. Because up to this point, you know, it's been cards, flowers, you know, and candy. You know, because they've been saying nothing but lovely things about the Giants. Oh, they deserve to be here. Oh, we knew they'd be here all along. That defense is fantastic. All kinds of flattery. You know, the Patriots are a very well-coached team. A lot of times they don't slip up. Bill Belichick, he grooms these guys. They should know better than to say anything. I was surprised that it was Tom Brady who slipped up and gave a little bit of billboard material. But, hey, not everyone's perfect. Now, frankly, if you need billboard material to soup you up for the Super Bowl, then, you know, maybe you got problems anyway. But I'm definitely taking the Giants. And they're getting 3 points. And I'm definitely taking the 3 points. And, you know, I've been on fire here through the playoffs. You know, I picked the Giants to make it to the Super Bowl. I picked against the Patriots, but the Patriots did not cover. So I've been doing pretty well with my picks throughout the playoffs. I don't see my winning streak coming to a halt. And I see, you know, the Giants definitely winning the Super Bowl on Sunday. I don't think it's going to be a blowout for any matter. You know, because the Patriots, you do have to respect them. They can't score. And I think the injury to Rob Gronkowski, their tight end, is also big. He has a high ankle sprain. Gronkowski's game is his feet. He's a big dude who's fast. Now, there's not so many big guys that are fast that can catch a ball. He is. And that's what, you know, that's what separates him. So he needs to have his feet. He needs to make cuts like a wide receiver makes cuts. He needs to do this. He needs to do that. And you're pushing off with your feet for that. And when you have a high ankle sprain, man, I can guarantee you that if the Super Bowl had been, you know, last Sunday instead of this Sunday, he wouldn't have even played. These high ankle sprains are a bitch, especially with guys that are my size, man. You know, you're heavy and you use your feet, and that high ankle sprain is a bitch, and it's really going to affect them. So that's another, you know, arrow out of their arsenal. You know, he is going to play Sunday. How effective he's going to be remains to be seen. I just don't think he's going to be that effective, you know, but that's why they play the game. Moving on a little bit to baseball here real briefly, talk a little bit about some baseball. Now, the New York Yankees have been trying to stay under the salary cap type situation they have, you know, under the budget that they have. which is funny. You know, the Yankees are known just for spending gobs and gobs of money in the offseason and picking up a free agent here or a free agent there. Well, Brian Cashman has said that that's not going to be the case, that they're going to be frugal with their money. It all has to do with being rewarded 2 years from now if he stays under a certain number or so on and so forth. I'm not going to take the time to explain it, but what I'm going to explain is a trade that went down. The Yankees traded away Jesus Montero and a pitcher. Now, Montero was supposed to be the DH for the Yankees for next year. He was an up-and-comer. We saw a little bit of him in the playoffs. The guy is a natural, pure-born hitter. Very good with the bat. Very confident in the batter's box. He batted over 300 in the playoffs. Very sharp young kid. Now, the only problem is he can't play any positions. Now, he's supposed to be able to play catcher, and, you know, that's supposed to be his thing, but, you know, many people in the league don't think that he's ever going to be able to be a catcher. Now, the Yankees do think he's going to be a catcher, but they traded him off anyway to Seattle for a couple of great arms. Got a guy, Pineda, from the Seattle Mariners, an excellent arm. He's definitely a starter. The guy has a great fastball. He's young. His salary is very low, and we have him locked up for the next couple of years. And the great thing about this is now we're going to be able to trade away one of our pitchers. Now, many people are crying for us to get rid of A.J. Burnett because we have a glut. And in our rotation, we have too many starters now. And, you know, because Phil Hughes is there as well. And Brian Cashman doesn't consider Phil Hughes a bullpen guy. He considers him a starter. So the Yankees really need to get rid of, you know, either Phil Hughes or A.J. Burnett in order, you know, trade one of them. Yes.
We have to wind up because we only have 3 minutes to sign out. So
right. I'll just wrap this up real quick. Basically, either A.J. Burnett's going to go or Phil Hughes is going to go. Many people would rather have A.J. Burnett go. I agree only because Phil Hughes is younger and he's a homegrown Yankee. But we need a new designated hitter. Some of the names that have been mentioned, Hideki Matsui, a couple more guys, another guy from Seattle, and Johnny Damon has been mentioned. So, I don't know, we'll have to wait and see. But I'll talk more about this after the Super Bowl. We'll be getting into baseball very soon because there'll be pitchers and catchers before you know it. Anyway, that's it for this week. As I said, Giants plus three, folks. Giants plus three. That's it for this week. Shout out to all my woodheads out there. Ron, Mark, Leo, Dino, Troy, Greg, and AFS. That's it, folks. Enjoy the Super Bowl.
Thank you, Woody. Our guest, Gerald Corey Tonsing, for acquainting us with what's happening with the Palestinian issue, and Woody for his Super Bowl enthusiasm, and I guess we can say, go Giants!
I guess so. But in the meantime, thank you, and please join us tomorrow night when we get our 10 views. And Peter's still with us. Hey.
You're right. Still with us, Woody?
He doesn't realize he's with us. Okay.
Sometimes his phone doesn't hang up.
Okay. Anyway, I want to thank everyone and wish you a pleasant evening. And join us tomorrow night when Lila and I give you the best of alternative news and views and commentary. Okay?
So, all right, folks.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, and enjoy the rest of your evening. And we'll talk to you tomorrow night.
don't understand. He's got a lousy.
Doing